Hey, everybody. Welcome to UGA Sports Live Podcast. My name is Roddy DeBulsey. I'm joined by Dane Young, Jake Roos, Dave McMahon, and, of course, Jim Donnan, the main reason everybody's tuned in today. We are live from Academia Brewing Company, where we're going to have a few beers, going to have a nice lunch, some fantastic food because they have the best stuff here, best beers, best dinner. Great place to watch the Super Bowl, and I'm sure a lot of people were here. We talked to Matt. He said that they were absolutely loaded with folks watching the Super Bowl here. Yep. Not a shocker. And to me, the Super Bowl kind of marks the end of the 2020 year. You know, you have you kind of have those benchmarks throughout the year, you know, first day of spring practice, the Masters, players report, you know, first day of fall camp, first game, playoffs, whole thing. And to me, the Super Bowl, even though it's not college football related, is kind of like the final end of that previous year. So now, I know that there's supposed to be some spring football, right? Some teams are supposed to play.
A couple conferences are playing.
High school places, too.
Yeah, so there'll be some. But it's, to me, all eyes go forward to 2021. I know the Georgia fans are excited about it. Dash has a good series where we're breaking down each position, kind of what's coming back. We've got depth charts coming out. We've got 2022 recruiting taking off. We're going to get Jake to bust out some of the 2022 guys. We had our guys at the a 7-on-7 recently, you know, talking to Gunnar Stockton, the guys like that, and Delp. Just a ton of forward-looking now. And we saw that the Georgia football team got together in the giant indoor practice facility, not the multi-use room, but an actual real-life indoor practice facility. They had the Super Bowl up on the giant screen. They had it catered. It looked like a great time. They were all watching. And, you know, they're watching Mecole Hardman. And a lot of those guys were like, hey, that's where I want to be in a few years. So, again, they're looking forward. We're looking forward. And spring practice, one of those benchmarks, is just, what, five March 15th? Let me do some math. My birthday is coming up next week. a month after my birthday, we're looking at 5 weeks. Georgia will start spring practice. 2 months from now, or 10 weeks from now, we'll see the G-Day game. So, again, those benchmarks. And I know everybody kind of was excited about it, but, Coach Donald, I'm going to go to you first. What does Georgia do now? Between now, having watched Super Bowl, all eyes looking forward, and the first day of spring camp?
You know, several things are occurring here. First of all, for the coaches that, you know, you finished the recruiting for last year with the signing date, and then you know, obviously are working on the next year and the year after that. But as far as the football part, it's a really good time to do what we call self-scout, where you go back and look at what worked for you, what didn't work, study some other teams around the country. We have analysts that study teams that did things and then give you reports that you might look to amplify your offense, defense, or special teams. And basically just look at what won for you and what got you beat and work on it. Add it to your playbook or delete it or whatever you need to do. From the player's perspective, this is a really good time for to really hone in on your skill development as far as strength and conditioning, not so much your specific skill related to your player position, but really doing a lot of strength and conditioning. Also working hard on the mental aspect of studying your position where you get to watch cut-ups. They got the iPads that they send them, watch your plays that you were in on last year. Watch some people around the country, like a wide receiver, like, you know, watch this guy. This is the way he runs a slant route. All that's just self-analysis. But then during the week, heavy lifting, 4 days a week, they do some heavy lifting, two days, probably upper body, 2 days lower body. And then 1 day of the week, they do some kind of run, you know, more of a cardiovascular run, and then build up to where in a couple of weeks they'll start the actual coaches on the field with them doing the what we call the off season. You know, people call them mat drills back in the day, but they don't do that per se anymore. But a lot of, you know, county fair. If you just look like you're at a county fair and you got a lot of different things going on, that's what they call it. You got stations, one station's agility, one cone ones, and everybody just stays in your position group and goes around. And then after that, they do some 7-on-7 and pass rush drills just on their own. The coaches can't be there. So it's all a build up to 5 weeks from now when practice starts. And the difference is this year, we won't have a break before spring break. You know, kids usually the last day of before spring break, they'll do something and then they come back and then have one day of working out and then start on a Tuesday. But now they'll start, you know, going right through. And it's going to be great to see all these young guys. We got 16 in here that are going to really help our squad depth, and hearing a lot of good things about those guys. And, you know, basically, I don't know what else I can tell you except I know this, and everybody busts me all you want to. I wouldn't trade what we got in our building right now with any team in the country as far as returning team, guys that have played, young players, star ratings, whatever it might be. I mean, we got what it takes. We're going to have to put it together for sure. But I like where we are with our team and our coaching staff. And, you know, hopefully we can be a normal year where you do the things that let you be Georgia instead of having the COVID restrictions.
I think one of the critical things too with the early enrollees is that they are getting to adjust to the freedoms that they're having. You know, in high school, that schedule is so rigid where, you know, first period, you're going to be here, second period here. There's always an adult somewhere making sure you're where you're supposed to be. It's not that way in college. And especially right now with a lot of classes being online, you know, these guys are having to show personal responsibility earlier than ever. Not to say that they don't have help and there aren't people trying to make sure that they can navigate that well, but it's really important that they're getting to do that in the spring rather than in the fall when it's, you know, full on football.
Also, a fresh crop of co-eds, man. Come on, what are we talking about? It's not the girl from across town any longer. It's the girl from all over, man. Get over it.
I got a text that from somebody in the know, and it's not anything that I'm sure my man Jake Roos knows, but said that Brian Thomas is going to sign with LSU today.
Oh, good player.
Not a big surprise there. We kind of laugh. Jake says, you know, hey, there's a new crop of co-eds, and we all kind of laugh, but that does matter.
That's one of the things I look forward to every year in college. What? It's the same thing.
No, but you know, you talk about that freedom, you know? Hell yeah. And so you're at the Tate Center and you see a girl, she's just stunning, and you're a football player, and you start talking to her, and all of a sudden, you know, it's like, hey, why were you late for workouts today? oh my God. And like my son's gone to the same school it's a K-12 school, Athens Christian. And my son today will be in the state championship wrestling. So we'll talk about that later. So I'll be leaving, might leave the show a little early, head down to Macon. Point being, seen the same girls, he's grown up with them. All of a sudden he's going to get to college and just be like, wow, you know, his head's going to be, it's going to be tough for him to focus the first.
And when you go to school like Georgia, when it's like 52 to 58% female and all, and looking darn good.
So there'll be an adjustment. And then again, it's like you're responsible for your meals, you're responsible for your housing, you know, the parents aren't there. So there is that
the growing up factor.
Growing up, exactly. You know, if you have a roommate who doesn't do dishes.
What?
You know, stuff like or laundry. We say adjusting to the college life and we pass right by it, but there is some of that to it. You know, we've seen guys who've had a hard time adjusting. We've seen some guys that have had a hard time adjusting to the NFL life, you know, and that's each progression comes with its own challenges. And I think that having those 16 guys here now, instead of coming in June to kind of get acclimated to it. I mean, they're doing those four. Coach says they've got four heavy lifts and a run a week. I mean, there's some bodies that Georgia brought in this recruiting class that need to add 10, 20 pounds of muscle. They haven't seen guys they're going up against who are this fast, this strong, you know. I can't imagine what – it's not saying that Dylan Fairchild needs to put on muscle, but, I mean, this is a guy who's been used to tossing guys around. Amarius Mims is used to just throwing two or three bodies around.
He's used to going against 200-pound defensive linemen. You won't see 220-pound – 230-pound defensive lineman in the SEC, you'll see 280.
I'm really excited about having those 16 guys here. And some of them needed surgery. as our man Dane has pointed out, you know, a lot of those guys came in and they had lingering issues, and those are being adjusted. So, again, it's I'm really excited about seeing those guys go through the system, having Scott Sinclair work with them, getting their own cuts from the getting the – like Coach said, it may not be your cuts that you're looking at. You're looking at other guys in the country. So turn into a David Daniel and say, hey, you know, this is what we want you to do. You know, hey, Lavoisier Carroll, you know, here's what you did at IMG, but here's what we want you to do here, and here's the clips from last year. Here's your blocking assignment on this play, and he's able to go through the book. I just think it's going to be invaluable to have those guys here. So when Coach says, hey, I wouldn't take any other team over what we've got coming back, I'm like, that's not hyperbole. I think that's a damn good fact.
And I want to ask Coach, like back in the late 90s when he was coaching Georgia, I've always heard about like one or two possibility, like players possibly leaving high school early and going to school at Georgia. But now, like Roddy said, 16, that's, I mean, when did it jump from one or two or three to almost half your, like more than half your recruiting? Yeah, more than 75% of your recruiting class. I mean, was there ever talk about, like, how do you talk to a player and say, hey, are you able to graduate early, or how does that work?
Yeah, it was just, it's just the evolution of guys getting, you know, in their schoolwork, being setting up things in the ninth grade. So if they know they're going to be a player, they work with their coach and they're set up to graduate and have enough credits to get out there, you know, after their junior year, you know, after Christmas. But there weren't a lot of guys, you know. The first guy I can remember it in Georgia when I wasn't coaching there, Eric Zier came in early like that. And, you know, we've had some guys over the years that did that. And it's just, it's like Roddy said, or anybody, you know, it's great that you could get them in the summer and work with them. But now to have them, it's almost a full year, because when you look at the installation process, and by that I mean teaching your system, you get a full install before spring practice, after spring practice, before May semester, coming back in the summer, during summer workouts, that's three, and then going again when you start your fall camp, that's four. So you have a chance to install your offense, defense, special teams four times before you even play. And back when I was coaching, you know, maybe one and a half times, but, you know, we would do it. But I think repetition is good for anything. You know, like Coach Switzer said, why do you do this thing 999 times and all that stuff? You know, you got to do it because, you know, 1,000 times is not enough, really. You got to do it. Repetition's good, and that really helps you. But, and we run a lot of offense and defense here. There's no question about it. We got a pro style offense now with Munkin here, have, you know, a lot of plays, a lot of formation. Then defense, I've said before, you know, we're very intricate defense, and special teams are very, you know, work hard at it. So, you know, learning the it's hard to play early here as a starter, as an offense or defensive player. You can play as a special teams guy very early because they use that athleticism, but we'll see more of that. And, but I feel that's a good question. And the thing we need to do is have a normal spring there, you know, where they can actually have the G day. That would be great to see these young guys where the fans can see them. But I can tell you two guys right now that they're going to make everybody's mouth feel like Niagara Falls: Mims and Bowers. I just can't, everybody keeps telling me about Bowers, like, really? You know, how fast he is and, you know, athletic he is. I mean, he's among the most athletic kids here. And of course we know about Ringo. We know about Carter. We know about, you know, Broderick Jones. I mean, our offensive line is going to be – that's going to be a tough deal getting the best five out there now. I mean, it's going to be very competitive to see how you're going to move those guys around, because, you know, you can see Mims moving right tackle and McClendon moving inside. Here's an all-conference freshman All-American guy, you know what I mean? But I mean, you got to get Mims and Jones and Ratledge and those guys out there some way. So does that mean moving Ratledge to guard or center? Or, I mean, it's a lot of things out there for Luke, that's for sure. And of course Kirby would be helping him out a little bit.
Yeah, that's that room suddenly turned into a Thunderdome. Two men enter, one man leaves with a starting spot.
Jake, how am I not prepared for the fact that Brock Bowers might be one of the best athletes on the team? Why have you failed in alerting me to this?
Well, I don't think I have, in fact. I think if you'd read the vault, you would probably know more about that. But
I know you don't
venture over there to where the recruiting people hang out and amongst our ragged company. So
they really scare me.
But I told people this about Brock, and I think that you can see this from watching his tape. Now, I think one of the reasons that he probably doesn't get as much hype or didn't get as much hype is he didn't have a senior season. I mean, he didn't play. There was no – California didn't have football. So he is a guy who – was highly rated coming into that junior year, but then was able to kind of fly under the radar after that because there wasn't really much to catch him in. I've said before, and I think that he compares very well to a guy like Isaac Nauta. I think that it's a very similar comparison, a little bit bigger guy, but similar hands, a guy who can catch, a guy who can get out there and make plays for you. I think that, you know, they're going to be able to utilize him in a number of ways. He's kind of, you know, coming at it with that ability to block as well. Just a total package guy. So you got to be excited, I think, about what Brock Bowers brought to this class. They took one tight end for a reason, and there was a reason that they targeted him throughout.
Good comparison. Maybe a little more Jets, you know, a little faster. But that's a very good comparison. And
more Kelsey or Gronkowski?
I'll take either.
I'll take Darnell Washington to beat Gronkowski. How about that?
I mean, seriously, how many teams would have your game plan say, hey, you're talking to your team the night before the game, you're the defensive coordinator for the Bucks, and say, look, we're going to get a four-man rush, and we're going to rotate you guys up front. We're not going to have to go after this guy except with four guys with their own line down like it is. We're going to give Kelsey all the catches he wants. We're going to double number 10 until he goes home on the plane. And, hey, see, dare him to run the ball, and we're going to keep him from scoring a touchdown. So how many times are you ever going to say, hey, let Kelsey catch as many as he wants as long as he just stays in front of us? And he caught 10.
Yeah, Todd Bowles had a good game plan there.
I did some good recruiting, too. I'm talking about Sue, how do you do, Barry? Those guys, I mean – come on. And then
he liked getting out of Detroit pretty quickly.
V to V, man.
How about White?
Ooh. Yeah. He did that at LSU too, though. I mean, he's nice. Just been a monster for years at this point.
White, Roquan Smith type. I mean,
yeah, definitely. Coach, it's interesting you bring that up and that we're talking about that because we actually had a question on the board about is there anything Georgia could take away from the way that Tampa Bay defended Mahomes in preparing for Ugalele and Clemson.
Louis Ungalele.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. We'll go with that.
Well, the first thing you got to do is go over there and step on his toe, and get his turf toe. And then you got to get three of his five linemen hurt. Hey, the guy had a heck of a game considering he didn't have any protection. And, you know, certainly that's a good question. But I think Ugalele is not nearly as doesn't use all the different motions that Mahomes does, but it was just a really good plan of making them beat you, and they couldn't do it. I mean, they defended them. They played a two shell. I think 92% of the time they had two safeties back there working on 10 and McColl. They just wouldn't let them get deep. And worked on their underneath stuff, and they really did a pretty good job on the run too. And of course, they had a pretty good offense going too there. I mean, that guy that played quarterback for him knew what he was doing too.
He's so okay. Do you see Georgia kind of saying, "Hey, he's easier to defend."
The thing that's really surprising to me that I saw. We'll stop talking about pro football. In the college football world, compared to the pro football world, Tampa Bay wouldn't have been in the playoffs. Their wild card team played every game on the road, went to Washington, went to New Orleans, went to Green Bay, and made the playoffs, you know, with a they lost going into December, they were 7-5, and then they won their last few games. But just a great example of why you need to expand the playoffs in college. I think there's so many teams that get hot at the end of the year. I mean, look at our team at the end of the year when we established quarterback. Even though we had a tough game there against Cincinnati with some of the players out. But, man, it's just I'd like
there to see a, right. There have been a couple times where Georgia was red hot at the end of the year. And it's like, oh, yeah, but remember that second week of the year, second game where you lost that one? Yeah,
you win every game. I mean,
it's just it just ticks me off because it seems like if there's ever a way for one team to be hampered or – voted against, Georgia seems to always be the poster child for the one that missed out by the skin of his teeth. And you go back and look at some of the team, the times where had there been expanded playoffs, Georgia would have been in it.
2007.
Three teams this year could have made it in that eight, A&M, Georgia, and Oklahoma. I mean, three at the end of the year, look where they were playing, and Florida was trending the other way.
You'd have a hard time convincing me one of those three wouldn't have given Alabama a little bit better run, too.
Yeah.
That's a very good point, you know, or just
we did give them a run for a half, but.
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's go. We got some good questions today, or what? Are you going
to
give
us? Before you get to those, I want to mention our friends over at Athens Ford. They're doing a fantastic job in this whole COVID era with taking care of their place and taking care of their customers who come in. They're doing a fantastic job when folks come out and say, hey, I need some service done. They have that immaculate service center with the free Wi-Fi, the free snacks, you know, individually wrapped snacks, the drink machines to take care of people. And say, look, come out here, get your work done, stay safe. We got that. Same if you're looking to buy a car, either a new car or a Ford certified pre-owned car. Remember, they are the number one dealer in Georgia for Ford certified pre-owned vehicles. But if you say, hey, I'm looking for a pre-owned vehicle or a new vehicle, and I really don't want to come around and have a salesperson right there. I don't want to come into a showroom. So look, just go online. You go to their website. You're going to get a $250 off coupon right off the bat on any vehicle you purchase. If you are a student, you're going to get $500 off. If you're a veteran, you'll get $500 off. Everybody will get the lifetime powertrain warranty on any vehicle, new vehicle or a pre-owned vehicle under 80,000 miles. Let's say, look, just go to the website and say, I want this one. Can I get a salesperson to go outside and do a FaceTime with me or a Zoom call or whatever and show me the vehicle? Let me look at it inside out, open up the glove compartment, kick the tires, you know. Hey, can you drop it off for a test drive? And then let me test drive it and then come pick it up later. They'll do all that for you. That's our friends at Athens Ford. They take great care of the customers, and they are a huge member of this community. They're doing tons of stuff for the folks in the community. Every time you go out to a Little League game or something like that, you'll see the Athens Ford signage and teams they sponsor, stuff like that. They just do a fantastic job. And, you know, they're going to have the big Broncos over there. Brian Glauer is his ordered, just saying. So go over there and check out. They're tough to get it. They're tough to stay in when they get them. A lot of the Broncos are already pre-ordered. But occasionally they get one in over there, so swing by, check it out. If not, they have some other fantastic cars you'll love to see. And I also want to mention our friends at YourPie. They hit me up. They were thinking that, you know, they want to know the over-under on Mecole catches. And they said over-under 3, and I said over. And he was targeted, what, 4 times?
Yeah, early in the game he was targeted quite a bit, and then but he ended up having 2 catches during the game. Yeah, but again, but hey, it's more than I got.
Well, some of those passes were not uncatchable, so it's – you know, Mahomes is running for his life. He can't get the pass anywhere near me, Cole. So, but the point being, you know, they're watching the game. A lot of people are watching the Super Bowl with YourPie Pizza. And today is National Pizza Day. They also have those big pizzas. You don't have to all get the small ones, but if you're having a big party, you can get a big pizza. Order one today because today is the double points day. So if you're on the app, you know, bring it up on your phone, you can get twice the number of points. Especially on National Pizza Day is a good time to do it because, you know, you say, hey, what's for dinner? Well, it's pizza. And if you want a plant-based or a gluten-free or a low-carb or vegetarian option, you can get all that set up from our friends at YourPie. They do a fantastic job coming up with different menu, nutritional requirement menu items.
Just like gelato.
Yeah, gelato. But if you have, again, if you have something that you're like, hey, I'm doing low carb or I need gluten-free, you know, whatever you want, they'll do. Plus, if you're like me and just like, hey, just throw all the meats on it, throw everything on there, they will stack up a pizza for you, and it'll be fantastic. All right, Jake, hit us up with some questions, because we do a – it's my fault, because I just kind of – I throw it to Coach Don and he talks, and we all get around there. I feel like we don't give our viewers enough time to answer their questions. It's my bad. I should be better about that. So, Jake, let's try to be better this week about answering questions. Hit us up with another one.
All right. Yeah, Dane, you'd be monitoring the YouTube guys, because we're always taking questions over there as well. If you're watching live, we want to hear from you. But this
tell
one,
us,
I'm
going to – where you're watching from, too.
Yeah, there you go. Matthew R. McCarty. I'm going to give Matthew a shout out because he's one of those brave people on the vent who uses his real name as his username. That's a shout out. Yeah. This is a really good question too. He says, a lot of questions today about the secondary. I think that's kind of become a theme. I think that's on everyone's mind. He says, Coach, can you explain how do you protect an inexperienced secondary against a passing attack like Clemson's?
Well, you know, you got to look at any game plan. You got to look at what your team can do and what the other team can do. And that's the way you protect somebody coming in from the back door there. Never know what's going to happen there. That's good. So that's pretty good. Anyhow. What happens is basically you got to look at how much pressure can you get without playing too much man coverage and putting those guys out on an island by themselves. So you got to mix up your pressures, your zone pressures. You know, the evolution of the zone blitz has really helped people because you can blitz, but you still play zone behind it. You just give up an area of the field that the quarterback's got to see, you know what I'm saying? So if you bring a guy from, say, the right behind the end and bring him in there, and you can still play zone behind it, but, you know, you give up something. Whereas used to be before the zone blitzes that Pittsburgh started back in the 90s using, you had to play man behind any kind of pressure. So I say mix up the zone pressures with the you know, a little bit of man, and you just got to take advantage of your big people up front. We should have an advantage. You know, they're going to have a whole new offensive line. So we're going to have to pressure them with our front some. And the best thing we can do is keep the ball away from them. You know, our offense, keep the ball away from them. They're going to have a good defense, but should be a heck of a miss, you know, back and forth there with Dabo and Kirby, because two of the top three teams in the country playing in the first game.
I think one of the things you can do too is just score a ton of points and give that defensive back crew a little bit of cushion that, hey, you're young, you can make mistakes, and it's not going to cost us the game.
Got to score a lot of points.
Offensive analyst there. I like that strategy. Just score a bunch of points.
Now, I thought Kirby Smart actually addressed this the other day when, you know, he was asked about the secondary. So, you know what makes the secondary better? A good front four. You know, a good front seven, you know, vertical pressures, getting to the quarterback, disrupting it. You know, the better those guys are, the better your secondary is going to be. And I mean, you know, we all kind of nod our head and go, yeah, well, you know, water's wet and sky's blue. But I thought it was an underrated point, because just like everybody else, when every time I do radio or something, I'm asked about Georgia's, what are their chances in 2021? We're like, oh, that secondary is so young. So inexperienced, you know, we get a little nervous. And there's a panic almost sets in, but I think having those guys up and running, you know, that strength would be huge for Georgia.
I always say, like, that's what makes football such a great team sport, because the better your secondary is covering, the more time the front seven has to get to the quarterback for a sack. Just like the more pressure front seven has, the more not the best pass will be thrown. So the better chance for the cornerback. So they each work each other out.
The other thing too is that if you can have one guy in that secondary emerge as a lockdown, shutdown guy, kind of like Stingley did for LSU the other year, it makes the rest of them so much better, because the responsibilities decrease.
Yeah, our secondary, I mean, I feel good about our secondary. I mean, I just think you got the number one corner in the country that was recruited 2 years ago, and he's had a chance to practice with, you know, almost three quarters of the fall. And so he's going to be, and it's a lot of pressure on him, you know, to end up being what you hope, but I feel good about, I mean, let me just tell you, anybody go out there and watch Ringo cover somebody? I mean, he gets to practice against Pickens and Burton and all those guys. And then we'll be okay in the secondary. I'm not as worried about it as Rodney is, maybe, but.
Well, I was worried about it, but just because how often, coach, have we said we focus on the negative, you know?
And, well, hey, we're the king of that on this show.
But again, when Kirby mentioned that, I'm like, oh yeah, you got Jordan Davis coming back and Devontae.
You just
look at the secondary we had in 2016. God.
Well, you mentioned, coach, that seen Ringo practice. Like we, Roddy's mentioned a few times that we don't get to see Ringo practice. Maybe he'll be less worried. He'd be less worried if we got to get him practice.
I haven't watched him that much, but I'm just saying you watch the tape on him and you see, and then Chris Smith getting all that work helped him. You know, he got seen back there, and our linebackers. I mean, golly, our linebackers, seriously, man. Dean and Tindall and Quay Walker. I told you, Quay Walker right now. He looks like White. He's about the same size, isn't he, Jake?
Yeah, I believe so. Let's see here. Devin White coming in at, 6 foot 237. Now, he's a little small compared to Quay Walker. Quay's a big old long cat comparatively.
He's not quite as fast as White, but and then we got – couple good ones in coming in here, Munden and the other guy.
Yeah, I like we also had a question about Mikel Sherman. Someone wanted to know, do you think that there's a potential for him to kind of get out there and break out?
He got some special teams work last year, and he's a very good player. I mean, he just got – see how he operates in space. You know, that's going to be the thing. It's just such a big adjustment for a high school player that's played against these teams and dominated, you know, and now you got all these guys running these combination routes on you and these different kinds of pass protection, all that. It's just that you got to avoid. This depends on where you're going to play him, inside or outside, but he's definitely helped us last year on the special teams for sure.
One of the things I really like about Mikel Sherman as well comes from a really, really talented high school program, and about as close to a college program as you're going to find in the high school ranks up there at St. John's Prep and right outside of DC. Fantastically run program. Coach, the second part here from Matthew, which I thought was also interesting. He says, do you think that there's a potential that you see Jamari starting the year out at left tackle just to be safe and have an experienced guy there?
No.
No.
Well, I thought that's a good question. That makes a lot of sense.
No. He just got too many tackles. I mean, we need guards, and he definitely would be safer, I guess. But you know, Broderick Jones. Now we've been talking about Mims. Broderick Jones is one of the top six or seven athletes on our team. Overall, run, jump, do everything. And this guy had a motor scooter accident or whatever he had and just knocked him out of the way there. He would have been a lot in the loop there. You saw McClendon, Condon, we used them right off the bat. He would have been in there too with his athleticism, but he got knocked around with that, put him way behind. And then Ratledge got the concussion. So really pennies from heaven from the standpoint we won 8 games, but now we got those guys had a lot of experience working with Matt Luke and knowing the system. But Broderick Jones. I mean, we got Broderick Jones and Mims and Truss and Willock. I mean, those are just
You got some monsters. There's no question.
And then we haven't even talked about Micah Morris or Fairchild or
Lasky.
Good. That's good. Even Roddy couldn't find something wrong with that room. He probably
could.
He would go in there. He would walk in there and say, "You guys really aren't organized enough for me. You need to do a better job in here."
He'd carry a metal pipe with him and crack somebody in the knee, just for the sake of doing it. This is an interesting one, Coach, and this one has been asked a couple times, not really a Georgia specific question, but just a kind of a strategy question, which I really like.
Don't make it too hard. Is this George Foreman? Is it true or false on the Hollywood Squares? Never from George Foreman. They would say true or false, George, and he could get it every time.
All right, Terciops wants to know. He said, why has college gone to a clap technique for snaps? Even when the team is at home, they almost always still act like they're on the road. It seems to be the lost art of the cadence, like you see more so in the NFL. I think if a team would go back to that, especially at home, it could be a big advantage. Most players have never heard a hard count, and free yards could be there for an offense.
He makes a good point, and you saw more of the hard count this year with both teams without the fans in the stands or limited amount. But going back to the silent count, back when Denver ran it, when they were going there with John Elway, you just raised your heel, and then the quarterback would see that he'd raise the heel, and then the quarterback would say go or set and snap the ball, and the lineman would hear it. Sometimes the tackle would hold the guard's hand, and when the guard moved, the tackle could move. But the thing about the clap deal that really helps you is the fact that the deception involved here. You can go on one clap, on two claps, or, you can just fake the clap where you just don't – you act like you're going to snap it, and that's like a hard count too. But what it does, it makes the defense declare. So if you clap your hands once, they could be snapping the ball, but you could also not be snapping the ball, and they're going to show you the rotation in the secondary. That's a really good thing to utilize is, you could say, when some teams will say on one, on two, so it'd be the second clap or the hard count might be, infinity or whatever you want to say. And you go, hi, or you clap twice. So that's what you use it for more than anything. It's a good question. You use it for deception to find out what the defense is in. And it helps you also in the hurry up, in the fact that you can have a code word for it, just like you say on one, it could be if you're over in Mexico on uno or dos, but you could go all that stuff, alpha, beta, infinity, whatever you want to do, and you get everybody lined up with these code words. But we do a good job with that, and we also have the count that you can use too, that the players like to, like he was talking about. So if you're in the huddle, you can say blah, blah, blah on this and call it. But usually on the clap is – and another thing you can look for that when they got this 25-second clock going down, right before they snap the ball, they might say something, hurry, hurry, to let them know he's getting ready to clap. Or he will say, here we go, something like that. Which is like saying set when you go up to the line of scrimmage and say set, blue 14, blue 14. So you say hurry, hurry, or here we go. And I'll give you a good snap count story here, and then I'm going to get off of that. But, I don't get to talk any football, and I like to do that because I'm a lonely man over here talking. So we had a quarterback at Oklahoma named Jamel Holloway who was an outstanding freshman quarterback, and he could really, really operate. But he had a tendency to forget the snap count. He'd go to the line of scrimmage and run a snap count that was different than what we had in the huddle. And he's standing there with the ball and our linemen are getting down. So I came up with the brilliant idea that when he said go, we were going to go. So we just incorporated. So if the play was on the first sound, he would say on first sound. So he'd say go. But if it was on the color, we would say set. And then if the next color would be blue, we'd say set, go. Or if it's on one, set, blue 15, go. So our lineman, even though we had something called in the huddle, as soon as he said go, we were going, man. And he would get things screwed up. It would be on one, and he'd go up there and look around and say go, and our lineman would just go. I mean, that's the only thing we could do. But it made us a lot better, and it didn't make Jamel look too bad as far as forgetting the snap count.
Did he realize what you were doing?
I like how Coach said, oh, just have Holloway as quarterback.
We won the national championship with that snap count.
Hey, it works.
Hey, Jake, I've got a question here on the YouTube chat I'll send your way, since we were talking about defensive line and defensive front a little bit earlier. Johnny Lester wants to know, he starts listing possible first rounder in Jordan Davis. You got Trayvon Walker, you got Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, Adam Anderson, if you're talking defensive front. Is this the best defensive front unit since Clemson's national championship team in 2018 with that defensive line that was just full of first round guys?
I'm not going to go that far just yet. I think that some of these guys require a little bit of development. I mean, I don't think that you're talking about Trayvon Walker the same way you were quite talking about Cleland Farrell maybe going into his senior year. You know, I think that those guys still have another step to take. I'm not saying that they're not talented by any stretch of the imagination. They're they're a great group. And in fact, I think they're probably the best defensive front Georgia's had in 10 years, I would say. But I think that to start getting into some of those multi first rounds, I can't go that far just yet. I'm not saying they can't get there, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah, I think that's – I mean, I don't know any of those guys that are surefire number ones draft – number first round draft choice. Do you, Roddy? I mean, do y'all think any of those guys are number one for sure?
They're having some technical difficulties over at the.
All right, do you think those guys is just like you answered?
I don't think when you say surefire first round, I really don't. I think that I don't think that there's a guy that I point to. Now, I do think, like I said, that there are guys who have that potential. I think that Jordan Davis can play himself into that this year.
Sure.
I think Jalen Carter, the expectation is he will get there.
Trayvon Walker is the guy, though, right?
Jalen's
just sophomore. We got him.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, by the end of the line, possibly Trayvon Walker, a guy that I think you know, can play himself into a role like that. But as far as surefire rounders, I don't have that very clearly.
Really, right, we got on our team the number only guy that I would think would be Pickens, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. At this point, I think he's the only really proven commodity in that regard.
If Jordan Davis would have been a surefire first round pick, then he's not coming back to Athens, right? You know, sure. That's not to say he can't play his way into that.
Work his way into that. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the expectation has to be too. We bring this up pretty semi-frequently. It's been a long time since Georgia had a defensive lineman, period, drafted, period. I mean, nobody. So you've got to get one on the board. You've got to establish that guy. NFL teams are going to want to see how that guy produces under this staff. I think that all of that really matters kind of down the line.
Good.
Roddy, are y'all back?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Sorry.
Marty, I was getting ready to do a couple commercials for you. You want me to give you one?
No, I got it. Hey, that's my only job here is to promote our sponsors. And
You want me to give you one? You want me to do a commercial for you?
Nah, I'm doing one for our friends over at Aaron Overhead Doors, because Ryan Lucia, he's gung-ho with his such-and-such media and all the work the guys at the Aaron Overhead Doors are doing, especially during winter, you know, when you walk out into your garage, and if your garage door isn't sitting flush and you don't have that little strip across the bottom keeping water and stuff out like that, and you walk out there and it's 15 degrees and you're like, holy crap, this is awful. You know, people forget how much insulation and how your heating bills can be messed up by your garage door not fitting flush or not fitting close, and that garage is becoming a giant cooler, you know, forcing your central air to work harder, you know, to keep your house warm. So, you know, sometimes you don't notice it as bad during the spring and fall, but get to the cold days like we've had, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, I need to get this garage door fixed. Or, hey, it's really cold outside. I'm tired of parking. I'm tired of not being able to come inside, and I take out all the groceries because my garage door doesn't work. So hit up our friends at Aaron Overhead Doors, A-A-R-O-N, Aaron Overhead Doors. They're in Northeast Georgia. They cover just about all of Northeast Georgia in their service area, and they do fantastic customer service. And I don't mean service areas, just the area that they go out and will do stuff. I mean, we should call it their customer service area because they do a fantastic job of customer service, and they take care of you from the minute you reach out to them. They're like, hey, when do you want us to come out? It's no charge. Here's what it'll take. Here's when we will be there. Here's who's coming. This is an employee. This isn't some strange contractor guy. They'll take care of it and make sure that that you are happy when it's all said and done. If you're not happy, then they're not finished. That's just how Ryan Lucy and the folks at Aaron Overhead Doors work. And I also want to mention our friend Ronnie Brown down at DR Construction Maintenance. That's another guy in South Georgia. If you need some work done, if you're in the Liberty, Bryan, Long County areas, you know, you're Richard LeCount's hometown, and you need work done, reach out to Ronnie Brown at DR Construction Maintenance. They will do a great job for you. Guarantee it. Never heard a bad word about the guy. I've never heard anybody that wasn't extremely thrilled by using him. So reach out to those two folks if you need work done on your house. DR Construction Maintenance, South Georgia, and they're in the Overhead Doors in Northeast Georgia.
All right, Coach, I got one here for you that I like as well. This is a good one. Untouchable over on the board says, any idea why you don't see more teams do the defensive line shift like Georgia? He said, I may just be missing it, but I don't see many other teams doing it. And it seems like it gets Georgia a few false starts per game just by doing that. Why aren't other teams doing that, taking advantage of that?
You know, a lot of it is there's a lot to be said about going up there and knowing your assignment and executing it and going up there and just being simple and defeating the guy across from you, as compared to, like you just said, shifting and playing. So you're thinking about when to shift, where do I line up in the shift? And so it's a risk reward there. So if you're good enough to do that, which we certainly have shown that and feel comfortable with it, it really presents an issue because of the defenses make the offense change their calls and all that. Just like when you see what we call a sugar deal where the linebacker runs up into the line and then bails out at the last second, you know, and makes them draw the block and then another guy comes in there. But it all gets down to the combination of knowing your assignment. If you're good enough to do that and show something else, then that's really great. But a lot of times guys just feel like, hey, we're going to line up and make them defeat us at the point of attack and play that technique. Because there's a lot of difference. And Dane and Brent do a great job on their site showing on the Film Don't Lie about where guys line up and what they do and everything. But a guy with a five technique on the outside shoulder of a tackle has to deliver a blow with his inside forearm to keep his outside forearm free, as compared to, and all of a sudden he moves down inside and he's got to do exact opposite, you know, besides shifting and not getting beat on the count and all that. So I hope I answered that. I don't feel like I did worth a damn.
I thought you did a great job, Coach. You undersell yourself.
You do. You know, because I think a lot of people don't realize when you hear coaches talk, they talk about inside, near leg, inside arm, free and outside arm, you know, near shoulder, all the angles that you guys have to play. And folks like me are like, it's all Greek. Are you speaking German?
No. Coach Vince Dooley was a great fundamental coach, and his brother Bill was his line coach, and he was the head coach at North Carolina when I was there, and I was a pretty boy quarterback and just thought about coverages and all. But Coach Dooley really taught me a lot about, blocking angles and what to do, like the fullback. Let's just say you're running a kickout play on the power where you've got to block the defensive end, okay? And he would always say, you got to point your toe down the middle and hit his inside thigh guard. And so if you pointed your toe down the middle and hit his inside thigh guard, you had it. You know what I mean? Or he'd say, hey, if we're going to run 16 and we're going to cut their ass like Bordenhouse pie. And you'd fake you know, that, I mean, that's our players could say that because that's what he'd say every time. But it was entrenched in them that they knew the proper technique, and they used that. That's the way he looked at it.
I remember we had
another guy that coached at Missouri that had all these symbols that he taught these guys, and his rule was the number one that I always like: flock, F-L-O-C-K, to E-mole. So you're going to fake a block, that's flock, to the end man on the line, E-M-O-L, flock to E-mole. So that's your assignment, flock to E-mole. And it used to drive me crazy. I said, how about if he just runs out there, and blocks the end man on the line? Instead of flocking to E-mole?
Hey, Coach, while we're on a little bit of a story time, I wanted to ask you about the late Marty Schottenheimer, who passed away today. Hated to hear that because long legacy in the NFL, and everything I've ever heard just says he was one of the nicest guys in the profession.
Yeah, Marty Schottenheimer was a coach's coach. He really believed in training the coaches, coaching them. He was very articulate. He lost a lot of close games in the playoffs, and people tend to remember that, but he also won over 200 games as an NFL coach, which is hard to do. And, you know, I always kind of structure my thoughts about when I watch a guy practice or organize and all that. And I had a chance to actually go watch him practice when I was coaching at Missouri and at Oklahoma, because they would practice up there at William Jewell College, where Dan Lanning went to college. And he always made it very, very easy for the coaches. He had a dorm where we could stay, he had a place there where we, at the training table where all the college coaches ate. And the guy that was in charge of the coaches was actually Bruce Arians, who was the running back coach there. And Bill Cowher was coaching there, the guy that ended up being a Pittsburgh Steeler coach. And, you know, just a lot of Joe Pendry, who did a great job for Coach Saban at Alabama, just a lot of good assistant coaches. And, you know, the one story that I told you guys off the air, I'll say this, that day that I was up there, Andy Reid was coaching at Missouri, and we were out there shooting the breeze, talking about practice and everything. You know, we just coaches sitting over there watching them. And he said, you know, Coach, he said, one of these days, one of us might be the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. And that was in 1988. And when the day he got the Chiefs job, I texted him. And I said, you remember saying that? He said, no, I didn't. I said, well, I remember you saying it. I was hoping that I would get to be a head coach just like anybody else. But I thought that's kind of apropos. But let me just say to anybody out there that the legacy of Marty Schottenheimer, his coaching tree is very long. A lot of good coaches coached for him. And he was very very organized, and you go in a meeting with him where he talked to the team. When he walked in the room, everybody knew it. He demanded that and commanded that kind of respect. And he always started out at every meeting in the fall camp where they would go over something that had happened to him the year before that got him beat. And he would be going over, this is what we did. This is what we got to do different. And we're going to cover this today. And when they went to special teams and practice, he jumped right in there. And he, just like Kirby does, he was all over those special teams. So, and I know his son, you know, people got on about Georgia. He did a lot of good things here. He's a good coach and a good man, too. And rest in peace, Marty Schottenheimer. He's a damn good football coach and a damn good man.
And you had mentioned Bruce Arians. I have a Bruce Arians stat that I wanted to find a way to wedge in here. So, leading, I guess, most rushing touchdowns in a season for a quarterback at Virginia Tech. You think it'd be Michael Vick. It's Bruce Arians.
Wow.
They were running the wishbone back there when Bruce was running up there for the Hokies. He was good. And he actually coached Temple when they came in here and played Georgia in 1980. Yeah. Bruce Arians is a very astute coach. And he needs to get a lot of credit for coaching Ben Roethlisberger and Peyton Manning. And now he's coaching Tom Brady. I mean, you know, of course, those guys probably help him out a little bit too. But one other stat here, the guy that's the quarterback coach there for the Bucks is Clyde Christensen, who was a junior college transfer at North Carolina that we had as to bring him in to help us give some depth. And he has been, he worked with the Bucks, Coach Trent Dilfer. He worked at the Indianapolis Colts, Coach Peyton Manning. Now he's coaching Tom Brady. Kudos to Clyde Christensen.
Wow.
Hey, Coach, here's a question for you in the chat. This is also from Johnny Lester. Does Coach Donnan remember the game that his opponent had 270-yard punts, both on third down? Because Johnny says he was there.
Was it against Georgia?
It was Marshall against App State, 1991. He says the punter was Harold Alexander, drafted by the Falcons.
Oh, yeah, the Marshall. I mean, the guy, I thought he had a ball machine out there. I mean, it was unbelievable. 1991. And, you know, we played them that game, and they beat us. We beat them the year before 50-0, and then we just had a lot of stuff happen that week. They deserved to beat us. My father passed away the 5 days before the game, and I wasn't there very much and didn't do a very good job getting our team ready. But that guy hit those punts, and we ran 17 kick out on the goal line, and the guy was – whole body was laying in the end zone, and that referee said he wasn't – didn't score. But, hey – shouldn't have brought up Johnny Lester's kicks on me. That chaps my butt, but they deserve to beat us, that's for sure.
Speaking of the herd, shout out to Byron Leftwich, man. Great job by him on coordinating that offense. Todd Bowles, a lot of credit deserved to him as well.
Yeah, Byron Leftwich is going to be a head coach up there. And, you know, we had Todd Donnan, then Michael Payton one, then Todd Donnan, my son, then Chad Pennington, then Byron Leftwich. I mean, I didn't end up coaching Leftwich, but that's four pretty good quarterbacks.
That's a pretty good run there. All right, Jake, ready? Any questions left?
Yeah, we got just a couple quick ones here on recruiting. What's Up Dog says, does the 2022 recruiting class end up being the best class in ratings and talent-wise that Kirby Smart has signed since being the head coach at Georgia? And if so, which side of the ball, offense or defense, will be the most impressive? I will say that I think that it has the potential to get there, certainly. I do think that it has a chance to be the highest-rated class that Kirby Smart has signed to this point. Now, there's a lot that can change between now and then. So I'm not going to go ahead and lock that pick in. Don't quote me on it, but I will say this. I think it's definitely got a chance to be the best defense he's ever signed. I think that this is one of the most impressive, especially when you're talking about that front seven. It's one of the most impressive front seven classes. Those D linemen, man, there's such a premium on them and they don't come around very often. I think that this year you've got a number of guys who can contribute on the D-line. You've already got several of them committed, and as long as you're able to hold on to them and then top them off with some of the cherries that are left out there, Mykel Williams, for example, would be a good one. I think that you've got a real shot at putting together one of your strongest defensive classes.
We all talked about how impressive that offensive line room is. Maybe in a couple of years we could be talking about the same thing about defensive line.
You know Kirby Smart's hoping we're talking about both, I think, for sure.
You know, it is important to note, we talked about how important the spring is to prepare these incoming freshmen for their first college football season. It is critical for these rising seniors in high school who had a lot of time taken away from them on practice fields or for coaches seeing what they're able to do in these camps that they're able to go to. This is a critical time for a lot of these guys to prove what they can do because they're talking to coaches right now. They're doing the Zoom meetings and all those things. But the work doesn't stop because it's the off season. You hope in a lot of their cases that they're playing other sports and kind of diversifying a little bit. But there's a lot of future plans being laid from these rising seniors in high school right now.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Got this one from Large K9. He says, is this Branson Robinson kid another Thomas Brown, nail gun, tough guy, And are we interested with his speed being 4.6 40? Branson Robinson, a guy out of the Mississippi area, four-star running back already on Rivals, and just did an interview with Sam Spiegelman the other day. Go check it out. We got it over at UGASports.com, where he basically said, look, Georgia's on me all the time. I'm talking to Del McGee constantly. He's one of the top targets in this class, I think, at the running back position. Branson Robinson needs to be on your list. Emmanuel Henderson's a guy we mentioned in the piece that Gunnar Stockton did with us on Sunday. Go check that one out as well, about who he's recruiting. But he mentioned Emmanuel Henderson out of Geneva, Alabama, a guy that he's going after. And then also I would be I'd be watching for I don't know. We had that list not too long ago. What was that about? That was about a week and a half ago. We did the 2022 running backs to watch. Kind of broke all those guys down. Jadon Blue off the radar now, going to Texas, it looks like. But a lot of good options out there. And you got to think Georgia wants to pull two in this class. Luckily for them, it's a deep running back class, and they can do that.
Jake, I want to throw a name at you to kind of see where you think he is in terms of future position. Malachi Starks, because I know that he could go a lot of different directions.
Malachi Starks plays the position that you get him on campus and then you figure it out after that. I mean, he's that special talent. I think that probably what most teams are thinking about for him is a safety role, and a guy who he compares, I think, favorably to, especially from a physical aspect, is a guy that Georgia just missed out on, and that's Terrion Arnold. I think that you're talking about a very similar build, similar athleticism in those guys. But Starks is a kid, man. He can go a number of different ways. Cornerback is a premium right now, right? I mean, that's the hot position. That's what kids want to play because that's what gets you paid. He could certainly go that direction. He could certainly be a wide receiver if he wanted. And there's no doubt in my mind that he could play some running back. I mean, he's a hell of a quarterback for Jefferson as well. So, look, the sky's the limit for that kid. He's one of those. You'll get him on campus. You'll see where he flourishes. I think safety's going to be that spot. But a lot still to be determined in the future of Malachi Starks.
When Rivals list him as an athlete, they really do mean athlete. And
yeah, they mean we don't know where to put this kid. We have no idea what to call him because he could literally do anything.
I like it.
I like keeping tabs on the recruits really close to Athens because a lot of times in these cases, you find guys that they grew up so close to campus that they want to experience something else. So sometimes those recruiting jobs can be even tougher than snagging someone from Valdosta or something.
Hey, look at Max Johnson, for example.
Yep. Yeah. And good luck to Max this year, man.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about him at LSU. I'd love to see him be the guy that just leads them to the SEC championship game where they can face Georgia and, of course, lose to Georgia. I mean, he won all the games but that one. But I know Max Johnson's a great kid. We've watched him grow up, and he's can't help but root for him. And the local kids, you know. When you see the kids that went to Athens Academy or Athens Christian or Prince Avenue, you know, you're rooting for all of them. So just because they're your hometown kids. Just like I root for all the kids from Markdale County, you know, Newton County. Those are my area, so I'm always pushing for them.
And when Max Johnson, his dad, Brad Johnson, he's no longer the only quarterback to lead the Buccaneers to a Super Bowl title now.
Yeah, so, there you go.
So full circle.
Speaking of local athletes, how about this Nabolsi kid rising up the wrestling ranks in the state tournament? What's up with that?
It's time for me to go.
Yeah.
Holly Nabolsi qualified for states. He was second in area, which is, you know, when they do area, you get to go up against a lot of guys who are in much bigger schools sometimes. So he's in 1A private and came in second in area and is now in Macon. They've just weighed in, and he'll be wrestling this afternoon. Finals are tomorrow, so hopefully he qualifies for finals. And so everybody, cross your fingers and hope he cross faces well and maybe does a few tilts, maybe gets a few chicken wings thrown in there, and he takes all these guys to the mat and kid that has worked his tail off. So very, very excited about Ollie Nabolsi and wrestling for the state class A private 160 weight class state title. So
by the
we're gonna duck out and I'm gonna run down to Macon.
Yeah, he's an incredible guy and best of luck.
No one commits, no one do anything for me. Everybody just hold on for give me about 24 hours. And nobody do anything news with it. But we do have a lot of great stories at UGSports.com. We got a fact or fiction about Oscar Delp. We've got the breakdown of the safeties. We've got updates galore. So tons of stuff for you to check out at ugasports.com. We know we mentioned it as the off season, but that doesn't mean we don't stop talking stuff. We've got the you missed the Gunnar Stockton interview. You need to go read that. A lot of good stuff at UGA Sports for you to read. And always just join the message board. The dog event in the past few days has been hilarious, fantastic stuff over there. And if anybody's looking for a wood and cedar gazebo, we can buy a couple of those. So just hit us up if you need some if you need some stuff.
You got Jake going.
Anyway, check out UGSports.com, the dog event message board. You'll absolutely love it. It's the best time you can have either at work or at home. All right, we'll talk to everybody.